Let's just read, it's in James chapter 1, verse 19. So then, beloved brethren, let every man be slow to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath or anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore lay aside all filthiness and the overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. If anyone is a hearer of the word, nor a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in the mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does. If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart, and his religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We're just going to look at the link between faith and obedience tonight. And James points out here by this lovely illustration of the mirror that the word has got to be matched with faith and then put into action. You must have had the occasion, like me, been driving along the road trying to get to a certain destination. And this was before the realm of sat-navs. You had to go and ask somebody. So you wind the window down. And you're praying inside. I hope they're just going to say, it's up the road there, and you turn left, and you're there. But they don't. They say, you turn left, you go right. You go right, you go over the bridge, you turn left, you take the next turning on the road. And by the time they've got to the third roundabout, I'm not really listening. I've lost it. In my mind, I've got the first thing they said, I'll turn right, and then I'll ask somebody else. And that's what you do, isn't it? The second thing is, it is no good, even if I ask the person those instructions, and that might be perfectly clear, if I do not act upon them, because actually I still will not reach my destination. I'll have an idea of where it should be. I've got a clear guidelines as to where it is, but I have to physically take and obey the instructions that this stranger has given me. I once was desperately trying to get to a meeting. I was the leader of the church in Ripon, and it had been a disaster. I decided I was going to really plan it well. And it'd been an absolute disaster. I lost lots of cars. And in the last final bid to get to this concert that we were going to, there was a man at the street. And I thought, I'll go and ask him. So we drove up. I wound the window down. And when he turned around, he was totally drunk. And he hung onto the car. And he didn't know where it was. And I couldn't get him off the car. And now I'm getting later and later. So you know the thing is, we have to become doers of the word so that we link obedience with faith, because that's how it works. You know, Moses heard the word, but when he obeyed, he disobeyed the king's commandment, but he obeyed God. So that obedience is very important. Look, this is a beautiful thing. I thought I'd impress you. This is what we're studying tonight. No, this is a cookbook. It's a beautiful one from Scotland. And look, flick through it. And look, there's fantastic souffles and all kinds of things. And there's all these instructions here. But it would be no good if I was to just memorize whole chunks of this and actually not put any of it into practice. The produce is important. It has to be produced, doesn't it? It has to be got together with and engaged with before. I mean, a very simple illustration, I know. But, you know, sometimes you can get the belief that because you know lots of Bible verses, you actually have done it. Well, you haven't. It's got to work out in practice in our lives. Do you all agree? So this picture of mirroring and forgetting, it's almost linked in with Jesus' words. And Jesus also said, didn't he, at the end of the Sermon of the Mount, if any man hears these words of mine and does them, he's like a wise man. If anyone hears these words of mine, the words aren't different, same words, but he doesn't. He's building his house on sand. And James, if you look at the Epistle of James, believe it or not, there's many, many allusions to Jesus' instructions. They write grief form. They're not direct quotes, but everything that Jesus spoke on in the Sermon of the Mount is refigured and brought through again. So, for instance, he says, be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. And Jesus spoke about anger. If I'm angry with you for no reason, then it's almost like murder. So, you know, you've got that kind of somehow put that into practice. And these, as James starts off here, these aren't like just some little, you know, self-improvement little verses. So let's be slow to speak, slow to anger, because that will improve the way we connect conversationally with people. Well, it will be that. But James has not just given us like little proverbs here. This is linked to something that's very important, and that is that having to work this out, he's seeking to gain our attention and say, look, I'm not just speaking here about, you know, just be slow to wrath. I'm going to tell you because I know what you're like, and you are now scattered. This was the Jewish Christians who were scattered from the persecution, and they were under persecution. And the context was that they were suffering and they were scattered. And it's all very well listening to these nice words, but when you go through a trial, that's something else. We don't have a picture of one of them or two of them, of people who are scattered. And James has already said, count it all joy. Count it all joy. You know, I was reading one theologian, he's a Lutheran. Hecklich, I think his name was anyway. And but he says, I've got a deficient, or we many times have a deficient theology about suffering. We don't fully understand how it works. And in the Christian and Western world particularly, I think we have a defective view of suffering. So here's people fleeing, refugees, and he's addressing them, and he's saying, count it all joy when you fall into various trials and temptations. Now, he wasn't able to sort of get right alongside them and help them pastorally with that, then that would just be a mockery, wouldn't it? And make kind of add insult to injury. But you know, trials and testings, they produce something. They bring something. None of them are pleasant. I mean, who wants to go through becoming a refugee? And there's a little test here. The interesting thing about trials in the Bible, they're not like the way we do tests in school. When you do a test in school, we're basically trying to get what information you've learned or absorbed or understood, and I'm testing it, right? I take Nat, who's, believe it or not, he's trying to learn the piano, and he's quite good at it, but it's like pulling teeth, you know. And I take him along sometimes, drop him off. Sometimes I sit in at the back or, you know, just wait for him to pull back out. And at the end of his lesson, we drive home. And Nat marks the progress of whether it's been a good session on the piano or a bad one. This way. It was a good day today. She only told me off three times. She only said I was rubbish three times. And one time she praised me. And his measurement is, you know, getting those down is progress. But God, when he tests us, okay, these trials that God, we all go through, and we do, don't we? You can't, well, they'll be very different for each one of us. And if you take the words of Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, you'll find some things you feel like you'll be able, that's not particularly a temptation to me. But others, they just seem to kind of think, well, I'm really struggling here. I've got to struggle to get that right. But some people, it is their tongue. Some people are very, very angry very quickly. I do a test drawing where I get people to just express things expressively. So what I do is we draw, and I want them to kind of put into their pictures a little bit of emotion. So what I say to them, I get a little word like anger, and I say, I do not want a pictorial representation of this word. I want you, and I put like seven or eight. So I always say love, but it's very hard because some people will not be able to do what I'm saying, because it's totally abstract. I'm trying to get you to put the feeling in. So anger is like this, you know. I'm angry. You've got to remember you're on the telephone, you're getting totally frustrated, and you're angry. And I did this exercise at college with some of the colleagues, and the lady who was leading the session, she put all our pictures up on the wall at the end. And she came along and she looked at mine, and she said, "Look at that. This man's got a lot of control on his anger." So I thought, well, little did she know that actually, although it was quite controlled, I'd pushed a hole right through the paper and it had gone through. And sometimes if you don't control your anger, if you don't let it burst out, some people have a problem with that. Others have a problem kind of like just absorbing all the anger, letting it ride over them. They don't deal with the anger in the right way. And that is a difficult, very hard thing to do. If you don't deal with it properly, it will go inwardly and it'll end up in depression. So these testings, however, are not unlike our English system of testing. When God's testing something, all right, he actually produces something in the test. That is, he's alongside with us in it to put in to us what is lacking and what is not complete in our Christian walk. And the end result is that we would be mature, lacking nothing, so that there would be no lack in your Christian maturity, in your walk, in your fellowship, your interrelationship with other people. You'd have what you need to survive. Now, when James is writing to this group of people and he talks about lacking nothing, he is not talking about material possessions. He can't be. Some of these have lost their houses. Some of these have lost their jobs. Some of these have lost family. They are going through horrendous. In the world at the moment, there are countless refugees on and on. But we all still face our own set of pressures and problems and difficulties. And I love the words of Jesus, don't you? How fantastic, isn't he, Jesus? Just everything that he said. I mean, the people who listened to Jesus, they were just awe. They said they've never heard such gracious words. But it isn't just the grace of them. They're beautiful, fantastic, God-breathed, inspired words. That actually, if Jesus wasn't the Son of God, if he wasn't divine, how can you put a word like heaven and earth will pass away? Well, my words won't. I mean, that's not an ordinary man speaking. That's God declaring the truth. So I want that, don't you? I want to come down here. I want to end up going through something that produces perseverance. That means sticking at it. And it produces maturity so that I do not lack anything more. On the positive side, then, this is not just about, if you want to put that other picture up for me. This is a picture of me when I'm in training. I was once in the gym, and I went to the gym and did all this little bit of exercise. I was getting changed afterwards. I said, that was a breeze. Not much to it, you know. And this guy came in, and he had a lot of muscles and a lot of things. He was sweating. And as he was getting dressed, he was going, you know, I thought, I'm not feeling anything like that. But, you know, there was a difference between his muscles and mine. And if you're going to get muscles like that, you have to go through the pressure of it. Now, this could be a little bit misleading because actually this is not about self-effort. If it was just about self-effort, we'd have some people who would be better at it than others. But this is God's grace in our lives. This is God who has loves us. He birthed us. He birthed us into new birth so that he might ingraft the word into our spirit, into our lives, to enable us to ultimately live in the righteousness that God wants everyone to live in. It is our right as children of God to be able to walk in such a way that we will produce a likeness of Jesus in our own lives. That sounds absolutely mind-blowing, doesn't it? But that's what you're called to. We make not enough common about actually when you were born in God. You were born as a son of God, a child of God, an inheritance. So when he starts talking to those people who's saying, let not the man who's kind of got no material wealth Let him rejoice in the fact that his status before God is absolutely fantastic. You will yet inherit. You might not see it this side of the glory, but you will inherit. There's a kingdom. Jesus is sharing it. And, it's going to be absolutely wonderful. It is wonderful, isn't it? So we're called into that. Now, all that sounds fine. On the positive side, we've got God working for us. This isn't just you doing self-effort. This isn't just, I'll do my best. But God helping us and being with us. The problem is, when we hit the trials, when you imagine, say, those people going over there through all those difficulties of refugees, we tend to get all kind of... it's not that simple. It is not that easy. There's a gap that occurs. For instance, if you were lost all your goods and now you kind of come into another country and you see wealthy people, you see people who've got well fed, you see people who've got clothes, you see people who've got... Would there not be a temptation in you to be a smidgen of a covetousness that could arise in you? Of course there could. If you're persecuted and your family are treated or mistreated badly, if somebody smacks your child on the face and you've got no power to correct that, would you not be angry? Of course you would. So in the situation when these things happen, we are under pressure. The test isn't easy when we're actually there, is it? Are you with me at the moment? You're looking a bit kind of, smile a minute. The test is not that easy. And we end up with all kinds of things. Be slow to anger, slow to speak. But I'm intensely angry. I'm frustrated. I don't know what to do with this. If I don't do anything, if I don't handle it right, what will happen is I will either end up in depression or despair or just a complete loss of motivation. What do I do? Well, the Psalms give us a little clue. Because on the one side with the Psalms, you always get the possibility, and they fall into two types, don't they? The Psalms, they're sort of like, Lord, as these enemies, smash their teeth in, please, and break down their barriers, and it's like as if he's allowed to kind of like bring all this complaint before God. But it doesn't stop there. Most times, most of the Psalms, David then says, Lord, deliver me from my enemies. Yeah, I want you to deal with that. But on the other side, Lord, keep me in your paths of righteousness. Help me to address the things that are in me. Give me a pure heart. Keep me in the right direction. Help me to walk as you want me to. So what I need to do is to have grace and to fall into grace for God to put more grace into me to help me produce this perseverance. It does not come easily. We did a big poster in Aidens, once, and we put up all the fruits of the Spirit, and this group were doing it, and they were writing it all out. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, kindness, faith. And they'd spent a long time on that, and they said, oh, let's skip the last one, eh? What is it? Perseverance. Perseverance is not pleasant, but if you persevere with it, ultimately it will yield fruit. See, the difference between the man who looks in the mirror and thinks he's it is that he forgets it straight away. The one who perseveres with the word, not being a forgetful hearer, you have to look at the law, the perfect law of liberty, and keep looking and keep looking and keep looking. So that when I get it wrong, I still go back to the word and I still keep looking and keep looking. And I know that that is what God has called me to be. He's implanted the word of righteousness in us. Jesus speaks a word of liberty. The whole Sermon on the Mount brings, it's a law of liberty. There is great liberty in not being resentful. There's great liberty in being able to kind of hold your tongue in the right way. There's great freedom not being covetous of somebody else's goods. There's brilliant freedom. And I haven't got all the words, but there is an outcome to this. You're called, it says, into a glorious life. Glorious life. That's a little bit of a thing you can get a taste of this side of heaven. And we are the children of God, and God, by his grace, has called us to live by that kind of grace. Everything you need, if you will go the right way, is given to you in godliness and righteousness. But the problem is, if you're anything like me, when grief hits me, I don't automatically, instantly feel I want to go to God. You know, there must be something that was left over in the garden when Adam and Eve sinned, they went and hid themselves. And when we get into our struggles, we tend to go off on our own little journey, don't we? We either feel very self-righteous or self-pitiful or all those things. And the temptation is, when evil is prevalent, we've got to stick with the word. Because actually, there is one little problem here. The testing comes, and if I follow that through and keep going back to the word and keep going back to the word and keep making sure that as far as I can do, I am putting this into practice. Let me try and make it this practical for you. There's a guy, you know, I'm only going to use this as an illustration, but I like fishing, and I went fishing this one time. I've made some real mistakes fishing, but this one time I decided to design my own fly. And I'd heard that people were using, ordinary leather, washing leather that you use. Anyway, I got a big strip of it and I stuck a little hook in one end of it. And fly fishing, it rides on just a very fine little fly that kind of fiddles around. And you throw it, you know, the whole thing is in how you cast it. Anyway, I've got this big long piece of washing thing, you know. What do they call those things that you... Chamois leather, great big piece of it. And as I lifted it up, it wasn't like a little fine thing. It was dead heavy. And I like threw it and it was boom, splashed into the water. And I instantly got some fish interested in it. Anyway, I was like pulling it out. It was very hard. And I threw it again. And as I threw it this time, the bailiff stood behind me. He said, "Can I have a look at what you've got on there?" And you're only supposed to use these very fine flies. And I pulled it in. He had some kids with him as well. And, I really felt like he said, "Well, I'm sorry. If you do that again, you can scram. You can beat it here. You know, yeah, I'm telling you." And I was trying to and justify myself and all the rest of it. But for a few weeks, I really struggled with this guy. And I even saw him I looked up their website and I saw him. And my heart was suddenly thinking, "Oh, there he is again. There's that. The bailiff." You know, there was like a reaction in me. Anyway, struggling with that, in the end, I thought, it's me that's wrong. I'm doing the wrong thing. I better go and square it up with him. And we had it out one day. You know, he kind of misunderstood what I've done. And we had this kind of semi-like argument, but it was civil, but it was like heated, but it was, you know, we had this thing. And in the end, I went and bought a bottle of wine and we shook hands. And I wouldn't say we've got the sweetest relationship, but I've got no ill feeling, no ill will, nothing happening, nothing reacting in me. And I thought, you know, this is as important for me to get it right with this guy who, as far as I know, is not a Christian as it would be if it was a Christian in the church. And we were going to face those kind of problems. So I had to keep going back. I had to deal with my anger until God sorted it out in me. Finally, I wouldn't recommend those flies. You get into trouble. So, let me just... There's all kinds of things happen to you in a trial. You get confused, you get separated, you get in your own state. And then what happens as well is we know that we're not making the grade. And the enemy who has tempted us in the first place, who's pulling us over here not to persevere, give up, you know, it's just too hard. How many Christians do I know who stuffed it off really well and they've struggled or they've gone off on a tangent and they've been tempted to all kinds of things? There is a tempter. But I know also there's a lot of Christians who really want to stick at it and yet they don't find it that easy and they're getting tempted here And as soon as they get tempted here, the accuser of the brethren then comes around the back and says, you're never going to make it. Look here, you've got this attitude or that attitude. You're wrong. But what James is saying, look, what he's trying to say is the trials are terrible. I'm with you pastorally. It's horrific. But something greater is in you. Something is greater in the trial if you can stick with it. But then he's trying to say to them, this connection here, this hinge verse, so then, brethren, it's not like a therefore. It's, can I really tell you? This is the really big problem. You might get tempted when you're under trial to react in the wrong way. So it isn't what's happening to you that counts. It's how you react to what is happening that is more important. God is more important in working righteousness into us than he is in me being happy. I said that once to our elders. They were all like complaining that their thing wasn't quite right. And I said to them, you know, I'm not interested whether you're happy or not. What I want you to do is what is right for the church. God's not interested in you. God just kind of giving us a nice kind of easy time necessarily. He wants to produce righteousness on the face of the earth through us. And ultimately, he wants you to be a mature, lacking nothing. Do you want that? Or do you want this opposite thing? Here's your test. I'm going to give you three little tests. And then we're going to finish with something. Three tests. Not easy. If anyone thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, that man religion, useless. I believe you're here tonight, all of you. Not one of you would want your religion to be useless. Let's test it. How's your language? I read a book, an interesting book, but written by, I love the Anglican Church, by the way. Let me just state that, put that on record. I love the Anglican Church. It's been a great help to me. But there's a kind of, I read this one book, and it's a novel. It's written by an Anglican. And it's supposed to be about Anglican ways and Anglican life. But the amount of bad language in it was just unbelievable. I thought, it was like a dirty novel, this. This is like, you know. And I spoke to someone and they said, oh, yeah, it's Anglican. It's the Church of England. As if like, well, that's the accepted level. Blimey, heck, this is not what it's about. I've been surprised, you know. I mean, there can be talk even amongst us as Christians about other people. And you do not know what's going down in other people. But you've got to watch your tongue. If you can't put a bridle on your tongue, if all the time you can kind of like say what you think about 100,000 things and you're always right, well, check it out. If you can't put a bridle on your tongue, then your Christianity, your religion, is useless. Pure religion undefiled before God the Father is this. Action to visit the orphans and the widows. That means to give them physical support, generosity. I don't believe that's the only category he's saying there, but this is an obvious one. When there's needs around, give your... Are we all right for time? I'm nearly finished. Short. I finished. I'm nearly finished. Because it's not easy, is it? It's not easy to kind of give to needs. But you know, I've discovered the more generous you become, the more generous you can become. And there's one church where it says, out of their deep poverty, they excelled in generosity. So there's a little test for you. And finally, you've got to keep yourself unspotted from the world. Unspotted. You're on a different mandate than the world. A different call. A different word is over your life. And by the grace of God, you'll make it and you'll be mature, not lacking any one thing. I just want to finish with a poem. John will love me for this. Because actually when you are going through it and you feel like you're not making it, it's a difficult place to be. But listen, as we go into communion, God is on your side. When he tests you, He's going to add something in the ingredients of the test, in order to produce something in you that is gold. Even Jesus learned obedience through the things he suffered. So when we go through these things, God is with us. So love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back. How easy is that to draw back? Guilty of dust and sin, but quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, unkind, ungrateful, ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know ye not, says love, who bore the blame, my dear, then I will serve. You sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat. God's with us.